Welcome to What Comes Next Live. I'm your host, Tom McCallum. I'm passionate about open leadership and write about leadership daily on tommccallum.com. I'm always inspired by listening to the thoughts of leaders I meet, which led to the idea for this show, where our guest first shares a little about themselves and then their thoughts on what comes next. And then we'll, over the course of a half-hour conversation, we'll draw some stuff out. Today's guest is my dear friend Ian Armiger, who I've not seen for ages. You'll hear more about that later, I'm sure. Ian and I first met on an online interview for him to be the director of swimming in the Cayman Islands. And we interviewed, I think, in 2012, and you came across then, that year after the Olympics.
Yeah, just after.
And we've been good friends ever since. And Ian is my absolute go-to when it comes to elite performance and mindset and positivity. And with all of that, you'll get to experience Ian in full flow today. So over to you, Ian.
It's great to see you, Tom. And I'm sure we're going to have a great session. We can inspire the guys that are on here. And I know a lot of your viewers, listeners have like a business space as well. And I think there's a definite crossover between, high-performance environment and sport in general, and the business environment. And so, therefore, hopefully people can listen to some of the things and then see how it relates to them, maybe in their business and their management and their leadership skills within their own company.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself, Ian.
Yeah, well, Tom, basically I swam on the British team when I was a kid. And back in those days, you retired pretty early from swimming. So when I graduated in maths and education, I started teaching. But I also retired from competitive swimming and, pretty much straight away started coaching. It was called part-time voluntary, but it was morning and night and it was weekends and so on. Eventually, my aim was to be a full-time swim coach. That was where my passion lay. And I became a coach in 1973, can you believe that? And I became a full-time coach in 1982, but my first Olympics in 84, and went to different positions within the coaching fraternity and ended up in the last 20 years being the director of swimming at Loughborough University, and built probably one of the world's finest swim programs. And in my career, has swimmers on six Olympic teams and so on. So, and we met in Cayman when I was the technical director there, and it was a fantastic experience for me, as you well know. And I loved it. The people were great, but I just missed the performance environment too much because it is my life and it's my passion. And the fit in that kind of environment with senior athletes is probably what I'm about, really.
Now let's talk a little bit more about that element before we get into your thoughts on what comes next. You talk about performance environment and the crossover to business. And a word I use quite a lot is elite. Mm-hmm. I love working with people who are already successful, however they define that. They're already thriving. There's this crossover elite and performance. And I remember one time talking to you about that famous, in the swimming world, you have, if everybody can read it, you have your catchphrase on your shirt.
That's the one, fast swimming.
Fast swimming. I remember you telling me that Loughborough is such an attractive program for the top age group, junior 18 and under swimmers in not just the UK, but beyond the UK, to come to university and swim. That you tend to attract really fast swimmers at age group standard. And were you telling me, you say, when you came to Loughborough, you're not fast, but we'll make you fast. Mm-hmm. And so empirically, some of them really are fast. I mean, they're very, very fast by age group and even senior standards when they arrive. But it felt like when you told me that, it was about mindset. And I think for me, a big part of performance and elite is about mindset as well as technique. So, what are your thoughts on what takes somebody from being, and you can draw the parallel to business and just general life. What takes somebody from being good to really great or elite? What's the difference?
Yeah, I mean, I think for us in that kind of environment, when the guys come in at 18, you know, if they say to them, look, you know, you come to this environment and you'll be the youngest, you'll be the small fish, you'll be the small fish in the big pond rather than maybe the big fish in the small pond from how you were before. You'll certainly not be the fastest, and you'll be the youngest and so on. But if you can buy into the culture that we've created here and the expectation, and you can lift your standards and your levels, then it is about mindset and it's about belief. And, you know, if I say to them, oh, well, you can be much better than you are, it's never a criticism. It's just a belief in how they can progress. And they're surrounded by excellence. I know that's a kind of a word out there, but they're surrounded by excellence and a can-do kind of attitude within. As soon as they enter the pool of dreams, then they're surrounded by Olympians, world record holders, the kind of images on the walls. Straight away, they get this excitement about being in such a program. And if they can buy into that, you know, we say all we want them to do is come, get a swim as fast as possible, get a prestigious degree, and enjoy being there. And everybody buys into that, that strap line, really, right from the word go. That was what it was all about. And every single person has their own Olympics as you, within the program. So not everybody's going to be an Olympic finalist or an Olympian or a world record holder, but they can certainly be way better than they are. And the analogy with business is that, you know, when I talk to the business leaders or the managers, say, look, you know, we're very much the same. We're very passionate about what we do, as you are, Tom. We want to be better at what we do, exactly like me, exactly like you. That's why we come on these podcasts and interviews and we listen to people and we seek out experiences. And, you know, we want to try to take our people to places that they didn't think possible, or, you know, the people that we manage through various ways and lift their mindset and create that thing and care for them in the process as we go along. Mm-hmm. And that they're all the analogies that within the sport and performance in business. And, you know, we do exactly the same things. We manage people. We try to take them to places they didn't think possible, but just in different environments, that's all. So there is an analogy, there is a crossover, I think, for the business guys out there with their own teams to try and lift that. What I would say is that, you know, I'd go back to that thing of elite, and that's why, you know, there's these kind of definitions of, so UK Sport did this big analysis of things like calling super elite and elite. And super elite are the ones that, like you, Michael Phelps, that consistently, you know, or any sport, that are consistently on the podium or win or break world records at Olympic level. And you know, in cycling or whatever it is, they consistently do it, or rowing, they do it, Steve Redgrave, those kind of people. They're the super elites as they define them. And then there's the elites who are very good and maybe medal at the European Championships or the Commonwealth Games. You know, they get on the podium, but they don't quite reach those dizzy heights of that. And then they're the ones that aspire to be elite. And for me, I guess my passion is I like to work with the super elites, but I very much like to work with the guys that are at elite level and here to try and get them to those kind of levels. And because it comes back to their Olympics, and nothing gives me greater satisfaction than seeing people swim faster than they've ever swum and reach these kind of levels that they didn't think they could reach. And that's where the satisfaction of a coach comes in.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm just pulling thoughts together in my head. And one of them that's pervading through what you talk about is combination of belief, an environment of excellence, and taking people to places they didn't think possible. And if I link it together, and very much is my experience working with great leaders of different kinds, is that the combination of the first two, of an environment of excellence, where excellence is the norm and there's a culture, allied to belief. I will never tell anybody, if I have an insight around what somebody can achieve, I'm not going to say that to somebody unless I really believe that they can do it. All right. But sometimes they're not even aware they can do it. And they really just need that insight and that belief to have the bravery to do it. And you know, whether you're a swim coach or a head of coaching or a director or a leader in business, that belief's really powerful. The outcome is that they will go to places they didn't think possible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But sometimes that might be just, with the nature of it, didn't think possible, might be really unexpected for them.
Yes.
But it's really, they come in there, there'll be things you see in them the first time they come to swim. There's things in their behavior, and there's the piece around your Olympics is also great. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about getting the, you know, the very top of the top in any sport, but it's getting people to go beyond what they thought possible through being in that environment. So that's a great lesson for any business leader, I think.
I think it's the culture, and right from the word go, it was like, when, I mean, people look at our program now and they look and say, oh, you know, they have everything. It's always been like this. And I can tell you that it was not like that. We had the worst pool in Britain and produced the best team.
Well, I want you to tell me about that, because you've got, you know, and take us from what you discovered when you first saw the pool at Loughborough, what you saw was possible, what you saw could be possible, others didn't think possible. Use yourself as an example, and then even take us up to what you just went to your office to get so you could show us later. Take us up to the present day.
Well, when I went, I mean, you know, for me, it's like I'm totally committed to the athletes, to the sport of swimming, but to the athletes that work in the program or swim in the program, or anybody that's attached to the program, because every single person's important in the program. So it's not just about me, it's about every single person that helps keep the fast swimming train on the tracks. And I had this passion to work at Loughborough and, you know, apply for the job and went for the interview and so on. Anyway, and when I got, I knew that they were going to get a nice pool and everything. But if I'd have been smart enough, you know, when you have an interview and they ask you, have you got any questions? Well, if I'd have been smart enough, I said, pool. And they said, oh, yes, yes, we're getting a pool. If I'd been smart enough, I should have said, oh, well, show me where it's being built then. Because I thought, oh, well, a year down the road, they're going to have a pool. Well, of course, when I got there, I turned up and it was still this pool that was built in 1939, which is an all-in 25-yard pool, which has asbestos around it. And I could hardly see the swimmers at 5:30 in the morning because there was so much steam coming off the thing. And 5 years down the road, we get the all singing and dancing pool. And through lockdown, for the first time in my life, I've not been to a pool for like nearly six months. And I'm like, what? So it's, and not only that, I've just been on a vacation in France. I come back and I've got a quarantine for 2 weeks. So I've still not been. So out of quarantine, people said, what's the first thing you're going to do? Go to the pub, have a beer. I said, I'm going to the pool. So as soon as I got a lockdown yesterday morning, I was at the pool of dreams, as I call it, right? So it's all singing and dancing. It's got everything. So now I thought, if there's another lockdown, I better be careful here. So I've now got a bottle of water from the pool of dreams.
Pool of dreams, magic water.
The magic water of the pool of dreams. So now if I'm out of my office, I can take a quick sniff, even if I'm locked down, so I can still get excited about it. But when out of this pool facility and the team, there was something like, I don't know, one kid went to the national championships and won a bronze medal in the 50 backstroke or something, which it wasn't this powerhouse that you see now. But my vision for the team was clear, that I kind of put this to the staff or encouraged everybody, and this is what we're going to develop. And I think some of them probably thought I was a bit crazy, but it was the relentless pursuit of that vision of how the team could be and the belief in the team of what it could be. And myself and a lot of people, Ben Titley, who's one of the world's greatest coaches now based out of Toronto, Florida, he was a first year undergrad. And we built this program with other coaches and other staff in sports science and the backup of the university, which is huge. Out of that, absolutely the worst pool that you've ever seen, we had like Olympians, Olympic finalists, world record holders, you know, out of this facility. And it wasn't the facility. So for your business guys, if they haven't got the best iPhones, they haven't got the best laptops, you know, no excuse. The business has to be done. You have to do the job regardless of the facility. It's not easy, but through relentless pursuit of the vision that you have and the belief you have, then we were going from like 5 a.m. till 8 p.m, 8 hours a day on the deck, these kind of things, coaching. And, I talk a lot and I get excited. So you guys will probably see that. But anyway, well, I had at first I had a girl who swam in the para swimmer, and I had this tiny pool, and she came to me and said, I want to swim in the team. And I'm thinking, how am I going to fit a Paralympic swimmer or para swimmer? She'd not been in the Olympics, should I say, a para swimmer into the program, and I can't do it. And I said, listen, I'll tell you what. And I took a real risk, and I'm not advocating it because you get probably get fired for it, but I had a key to the pool. And remember, it was starting at 5:30 a.m. with the rest of the swimmers. I said, listen, if you'll do it, I will come here at 3:30 a.m. and coach you on your own, just me and you. And she said, I'll do it. I said, okay, I'll do it. I would come in, open the door. She'd come in the wheelchair. There was no ramps then. Get out of the wheelchair on the backside, up the steps, into the pool. She'd swim for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I'd coach her. And then the next lot would come in. We'd coach them. So she had space to swim. So it's that kind of commitment to the program that everybody bought into that as well. It was whatever it took. And the support for that was absolutely huge. And that's how we developed the pool. And then when we got the new pool, which is all singing and dancing, and it has everything, underwater camera systems. You know, now we've got the magnificent facility. Now we've got everything that you could possibly dream of as a swim coach. But it helps, and it makes life easier for sure. The best iPhones make life easier, but the job can still be done regardless of that. If you have that consistent, and you have to be relentless, in my opinion. It's not like, oh, you know, you have mood swings and it's up and down. It's every day with the foot on the gas, driving it, driving the program, pushing things forward, and it was relentless pursuit of the goal.
Something occurred to me very recently about Loughborough, Loughborough University. Loughborough University, around the time and a few years before when you joined there 20 plus years ago, it was not regarded nationally as a top level academic university.
Mm-hmm.
For the last number of years, it's been ranked number 4 or 5 in the country.
Yeah.
Bear in mind that the UK has Oxford and Cambridge there. Right. Loughborough is absolutely a top-ranked academic university. And something occurred to me is that when you enter campus from the town side, the main entrance to campus, the very first building you see is the Pool of Dreams.
That's the one.
And it never occurred to me before, because my main exposure to Loughborough, as you know, is that my oldest son came to the university and swam for the program for 3 years and swam his own Olympics.
Yep.
Achieving beyond a level he thought he could thanks to that program. I'm very grateful for that, as is he. But my lens was through swimmers, mm-hmm. right? And having talked to quite a number of people whose alma mater was Loughborough of different ages, the university itself is lifted up for many, many reasons, but a contributing fact of it is what I think sometimes in marketing or business we call the halo effect. If there's something in there which is at an absolutely top level, relentless pursuit of perfection and progress and, you know, achieving what you couldn't do, then there's no excuse for the rest of the university. There's no excuse for any student if they have no sporting interest whatsoever and they just happen to be walking past the Pool of Dreams every day. They don't have to have really any interest in swimming to, they can't avoid hearing about the level of success that has come out of that program. If they walk into it, they see the banners hanging with the swimmers' names from the Olympics and all the Olympians that have qualified. That just occurred to me. So with the history piece, that's where we are today. And the context of what comes next for every guest is completely individual. It could be tomorrow, it could be next year, it could be next 10 years, it could be personal, it could be about a sport, it could be about the world in general. What comes next, Ian?
Well, yeah, I mean, Tom, I'll just go back to it, because your son Alex, when he came, and you know what I said before about the three things? Mm-hmm. Love to swim as fast as possible, gain a prestigious degree, and enjoy being there. And Alex, your son, ticks all of those boxes, in my opinion. He swam as fast as he could. He got an excellent degree to forge his career, and he enjoyed being there. Yeah. And he developed as an individual while he was there. And also, you know, going back to the story of the old pool, and this was the culture that's been created within the campus, like you rightly say, within the academic departments as well, that, you know, when I came at the pool at 3:30 in the morning, there could be a researcher, a PhD student, who's been doing an all-nighter researching on something that they are interested in. They didn't think it was very strange that somebody should be coming swimming at 3:30 in the morning. And I didn't think it was very strange that they should be working all night on a project. So it's that, that excellence that pervades the whole thing, and the can-do attitude of every single person involved on the campus. And when the Japanese team, prior to the London Olympics, were looking for a training camp, and they came to Loughborough to view the thing, I said to them, look, one of the main things here is that this can-do attitude. So if you want something, if it can happen, people will try their best to try and make it happen for you. It's not, oh, no, we don't do that. We can't do that. There's never that there. Every single person is there to help. So that's just kind of transgressing a little bit and going back to what you said. Right. In terms of the what's next, I think obviously it's very difficult times right now, and this is going on longer than we really thought. For me, you know, now these days I'm kind of a coaching consultant to the program, so I can work from home a lot of the time. Obviously, I miss the face-to-face of being on deck at the pool, seeing the athletes. And so I kind of created a plan, a program of each day, so I had structure within my days. You're laughing because you know what I'm like. But I actually had my days pretty much. So I still get up at 5 o'clock every day, and I'm in my office at 5:30, starting doing different things. People get emails from me at 5:30 in the morning saying, what's he on about? But, yeah, so I'm still like that. Now that we're back in, it's still very challenging because there's very limited, well, in swimming, there's no competitions right now. It's very limited whatsoever. So we have to think creatively to kind of, maybe there's a different take on things. So we're looking at how to create a competitive experience for the people in the program. A week in the pool, in the gym, they're back doing that, but they need an outlet for their competitive experience. So we're setting up virtual meets with other universities.
Oh, that's cool.
We're looking at different ways to stimulate them. We're having internal meets, external meets done virtually. The coaching staff during that lockdown period, as I was talking about before, we had a lot of Zoom. We're probably pretty much Zoomed out, but with a lot of guest speakers from around the world on technical subjects. So it's keeping people engaged. And I was actually talking to a coach last night who's struggling a little bit, and he's based in Devon with his age group program, and his pool's not quite open yet. And I said, look, all you've got to do is maybe collaborate with some colleagues within the area, try to come up with something to keep your swimmers engaged with the sport of swimming, even though they can't race, even though they can't compete. You need to keep... And he's had a lot of Zoom. I said, yeah, but that's not enough. They need to maybe do some outward pursuits things, or maybe keep... And he said, yes, it's the team thing. They need to they need the social contact and social interaction. So he can create that, not necessarily in a swimming thing, but he can provide that outlet for those guys to maintain the team spirit, not in a swimming environment, but maybe in a different environment. So he is thinking creatively about the things that you can do to your business, for your staff, to keep them engaged. And it's not all about sitting in a Zoom call, sitting in a Zoom meeting. It's about creating some other activities that will press their buttons and excite them.
I wonder, I mean, there's the technical thought immediately is like from what you're saying around virtual swim meets. Maybe they've already done it, but I wonder if because there's only two or three main companies in the world that provide timing for swimming meets. I wonder if they've actually upgraded their software so that people could integrate them at different pools and run live meets in real time with the results coming up on the scoreboard.
Yep.
With lanes 1 through 4 being in Loughborough and lanes 5 through 8 being at Bath.
Well, that's what we actually try to do because we're trying to have them at the same time. So we've signed up about eight different universities, and we'll have scoring swimmers and we'll have non-scoring swimmers, so every kid gets a chance to race. Because we've got about 80 to 90 kids in the program right now.
Sorry, before you pass on for that, you've gone from where you started and you have 80 to 90 athletes in the program.
Exactly. And we have, you know, most programs, if they go to the Olympic trials, they have one swimmer if they're lucky to go. Maybe that. We have about, we have 56 at the Olympic trials in London. You know, because it...
By the way, for American audience, when's the last time Loughborough didn't win the college championships?
Oh, 30 years, maybe 25 years.
25 years ago, yeah.
We have a host of...
So I'm conscious of time. It's a great conversation. The thing you said, and we laugh about this because you are a man of routine and structure. You always have been.
You got it.
I think if we're going to be a bit proactive around what's coming, there's going to be, in the Northern Hemisphere, is going to be winter. And also, we are going to have some form of restricted movement in most countries, whether it's a full lockdown or otherwise. So it has that effect on us, right? So I wrote something the other day about build your proactive resilience list, as in put a list together of things you're going to need before you need them. So you mentioned in lockdown, you set your alarm, you got at the same time, you have a small office in the house, you're in your office, you're doing things. It's no longer the joke that the swimmers used to have that they could always find you at the grocery aisle in Tesco at the same time every week if they needed to catch you.
Easy to assassinate. You know exactly where I am.
That's right. You repeat your pattern all the time. Yeah. But what's from the experience of the first lockdown, right? What do you feel going into another potential long winter? What two or three things do you think would be quite universally a good idea for people to put on their resilience list?
I think there's the, you know, we could talk about resilience and robustness and all those kind of things, but, and there is a thing like rebound resilience, so that you're feeling a bit down, but then you can bounce back off that look at it in a kind of a positive light. But I think it is creating that structure to the days, to your days. It's in my opinion anyway, having a structure so you know what you're doing during the day, not getting up and thinking, oh, what's going to do today? And then you take a long time to get to your work environment. Albeit it could be professional development. It could be all of those kind of things. But and you laugh. I know you know what I'm like. I'm very structured. So it's, you know, 5 o'clock up, 5:30, first coffee with office, sit down, you know, these kind of things. Second coffee, 6:30. And it's actually written down on a list.
You're written down on a list, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, on a list. And because my life has pretty much been that sort of structured daily program. And, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that somebody like, Barack Obama wore the same kind of suit every day, so he didn't have to think, what clothes will I put on today? It's like, well, this is what I put on.
Yeah, he had when he became president, he said, I'm going to be making so many decisions.
Yeah.
I'm going to have only blue and grey suits, and that's the only, I don't have to choose any more than that.
It's a bit like having a uniform, I guess. So yeah. I don't have to think, what do I do? This is what happens. So lockdown, to be honest, hasn't been that much of a problem, although I've missed the boat. I have used it as a time for professional development and gone off into lots of tangents because, you know, well, no, I like to be interested in a lot of things. So it's not swimmer specific all the time, but there can be carryover as we talked. So performance environment in sport can carry over to business. Same for me. What's going on in here? What are these articles? And I read your posts. And take articles for that and sometimes, you know, send them off. My friend Tom McCallum produced this. He might be interested in this to the young coaches that I mentor. So I'm still mentoring coaches, and doing some work for the business school. So I'm interested in all those areas. So it's that using it for professional development. And again, I think I have kind of got a bit zoomed out. So I'm not really doing many of them. They've probably done about 80 or 100 of them, but. So I'm looking at other areas. Now we can go to the pool. That's another thing for me, which is good. I'm coaching next week, about 7 or 8 sessions, covering sessions, and getting involved with that and building those kind of other other structures in what we do. And and then just looking for other, always looking for other opportunities to move things on into new areas or to the next level.
So, yeah, so structure and routine is one hand. On the other, is just sounds like to me just curiosity and just the desire to grow and learn. And I totally love, I'll say this, you know, for an audience too, but, you know, quite often I do get emails from you at 5:36 in the morning and I'm normally behind my desk by 7:30 or 8.
You're right.
I've got the same kind of rhythm, but just a couple of hours later because I didn't have to get up in the morning to be a swim coach for 25 years.
Exactly.
Or 37 years. I just did my maths.
I think it's also the planning.
You don't look bad for 85.
Hey, you never lose it, mate. What can I say? And I also think there's planning. People look at me often and say, oh, well, he's lucky. He just falls into these things. It just happens. Mm-hmm. But I always write down a plan. So I'll have a plan, a kind of immediate plan, medium-term and long-term plans. What am I going to do within the next 2 weeks, next month? What's going to happen within 6 months? Where do I want to be here? So I always have a plan. So it's those things, it's structure and planning and professional development, I guess.
Great. It's been wonderful, Ian. I'm going to sort of hit the end button and so our audience can get back to their day and keep it within roughly the half hour.
It's difficult with
me. Absolute pleasure. And as I always tell everybody, you're my go-to for elite performance. And I just really value you as a friend and somebody I learn from all the time. Thank you.
That's fantastic. Thanks a lot for being great.